Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, and, well, the first hour, our guest is Michael Shaw. And Michael is a political activist who is really trying to get people to understand what sustainable development and what Agenda 21 are. And, of course, working here in Santa Cruz, which is the heart of the liberal movement for the entire country, indeed one of the centers for the entire world, why, of course, he's well acquainted with the organized effort to utilize the so-called threat to the environment as a justification for progressively expanding government control over every aspect of our lives in the name of sustainable development. In other words, we certainly don't want to use up all the resources. We have to have a utilization of resources so that they're sustainable, and of course Agenda 21 is the globalist agenda for the 21st century, where every aspect of human endeavor will be regulated and controlled by a global elite. And with that as a background, Michael, thank you so very much for being with us again.
Well, I'm happy to be here, Dr. Stan, and certainly I have very profound and fond memories of the couple years we spent hosting the Wednesday night show up until 6 months or so ago. And I'm so pleased to be here tonight.
Well, all right, fine. Well, why don't you just fill our listeners in on what is really going on? Certainly the environmentalists are not backing down. They're expanding their efforts to convince the American people and the people of the entire world that we've just got to surrender our freedom if we hope to maintain the earth and certainly keep from running out of natural resources, out of water, out of oil, out of minerals, out of air. Oh, my goodness, we've just got to give up all of our freedom so we can have a sustainable future.
Well, that is part of their call, for sure. But it's really not just a liberal movement. I mean, the liberals are drawn in by the environmental element of sustainable development, but the deeper cores of sustainable development are its call for a change system of justice and a change system of economics. And the economics is pure right wing. It's public-private partnership, and we'll get into that later in the hour. But this is something that really meshes the liberal and conservative dynamic in a dialectic that comes out combining the worst of both of those right-left-wing elements into something even far, far worse. And that far, far worseness is sustainable development, sometimes called Agenda 21. But the definition that they give is this. It's, quote, development that meets the needs of the present without compromising the ability of future generations to meet their own needs. Well, if you think about that for a minute, it sure sounds soft and fuzzy. The language is actually lifted right out of the 1977 Soviet Constitution. That kind of language gives you the nebulousness that allows the powers to really choose whatever they want to choose. And if you think about, if people 120 years ago had saved the whale oil that lit homes, a few homes, for future generations, well, gee whiz, nobody would have had whale oil sufficient to do much of anything. And the great inventions of the 20th century may not have ever happened.
Hold on, I will be right back. Well, Michael, pick the story up.
Well, so the reality about sustainable development is that it's going to freeze all progress. It's going to result in a massive decline in human population after we've eliminated the middle class by following the policies of sustainable development. So we've got to understand that Agenda 21 or sustainable development is a path that leads to the loss of freedom and to the loss of progress on the earth. The initiative is, quote, a comprehensive plan of action to be taken globally, nationally, and locally by organizations of the United Nations systems. That means every member of the UN, governments and major groups in every area in which human impacts on the environment. The environment is always their safety call to put it under a warm umbrella, cause people to fall into line as they restructure justice and economics to the disadvantage of every member of the middle class in America.
And, of course, they use, of course, the so-called threat to the environment to justify ever-increasing government control over every aspect of life. And, of course, many of the people involved are sincere. They're very concerned about the environment, whereas they don't understand what they're really doing is working for a small, elite, very wealthy group who are using this threat to the environment as a vehicle of establishing a feudalistic system with a small ruling elite like Al Gore, who's not going to give up his big house or his SUVs. He just represents this group that wants you to give up your house and your SUVs. They want you to cut back on the consumption of natural resources and of oil and gasoline and of water, certainly, and of electricity, but this isn't going to influence them at all.
Well, exactly. There's a fellow named J. Gary Lawrence, who's a planner for the city of Seattle. He was an advisor to President Clinton's Council on Sustainable Development, who said in 1998 that, quote, participating in a UN advocated planning process would likely bring out many who would actively work to defeat any elected official undertaking local Agenda 21. So we call our process as something else, such as comprehensive planning, the term used in the state of Wisconsin, growth management, the term used in the state of Oregon, or smart growth, the term referenced frequently by Governor of California, Mr. Schwarzenegger. Every state, every county in America now has a program for sustainable development. Oftentimes it's referred to by other names.
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Michael Shaw, and he's simply pointing out that what they're doing is trying to confuse the public. Every community has these programs for Agenda 21 and sustainable development, but sometimes they'll call them visioning programs. Sometimes they will give them another name. They have many, many names, but they all have a common root, and that is using the environment to justify passing laws to control the common people and, of course, transform our society from freedom to fascism to feudalism.
That's exactly right. You know, the goal in the United States for implementing sustainable development is to undo the notion of unalienable rights. And these ideas that are the basis of America, they feel must be eroded, attacked, and struck down altogether. Last year, the Supreme Court took a big step in pursuing that with its Kelo decision, which basically, after 200 years of courts following the Fifth Amendment of the Constitution, which prohibits the taking of property, the Supreme Court said, that's fine, that's for states to worry about. The federal government is no longer worried about protecting private property under the Fifth Amendment. Our governmental process is succumbing with increasing rapidity to the false premise, false promises of sustainable development. And it's time that the average citizen begins to understand what it is, begins to know that politicians who were elected, city council people in San Jose, I remember talking to a young Hispanic city council lady there who had recently been elected and was so excited because she'd been going to these conferences for elected officials so that she could learn what sustainable development and smart growth means for her community in East San Jose. And without any real idea of what it meant, or the compromise of the principles of the United States. So walking down the path, whether you're in Santa Cruz or Albany, New York, or places in between, our governments are taking us to this new form of government.
Well, don't you think a lot of this, Michael, is because a lot of our elected officials really don't understand our constitutional system of government, don't understand this concept that liberty and limited government are synonymous. They honestly believe that government can solve our problems rather than the original and traditional American belief that government is our problem and that you must take the chains off of the people and put them onto the politicians. And they would rather take the chains off the politicians and put them on the people, because that's how we're going to be able to have a better society. And without knowing it, they really, of course, are working for the very enemies, many times the very enemies that they themselves oppose. They don't understand who it is who is really pushing this whole globalist agenda.
Well, I think that's right. And, you know, we can all start by reading the Constitution. It doesn't take that long. And take a focus for 5 minutes on Article 1, Section 8. You know, the real guts that limits the actions of the federal government. And if you read that document and you look at tomorrow's newspaper, you'll see nothing that tends to support the practice in America of the limitations imposed by Article 1, Section 8. So it's important that we all begin to get back to the basics and then hold our elected officials accountable for staying to the basics themselves. But in terms of implementing sustainable development, there is a clear and designed program or path for taking the world from where it's been to where they want it to be. One world government where the people are merely chattels of a higher elite. And that program is a sweet-sounding dynamic called the three E's. They've got defined what they mean by that. It's called, the terms are equity, economy, and environment, the cornerstones of the sustainable development movement. And by equity, it's worth examining these terms and how they define them so that we can understand where and how they're going to take us down this path. But equity is defined as using the law to restructure human nature. You know, the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution design a system that we call equal justice that's to be applied in the United States. Equal justice. But the system of equity under the new sustainable development paradigm is a system of social justice, meaning that the law will be created to change the nature of human beings. Individual rights, as one sustainable development advocate, we'll have to take a back seat to the collective. Well, that's what social justice is designed to do. The second of these three E's is economy. By economy, they don't mean the pursuit of free enterprise. They mean the international redistribution of wealth and the creation of public-private partnerships. Well, if you're a farmer in the Midwest or a farmer in the Paro Valley of Santa Cruz County, you begin to see what the international redistribution of wealth means as you find it harder and harder to compete with your product with the imports coming from Mexico and other places. It is an effort to move our manufacturing offshore. It is the effort to strip and destroy the middle class of America. And that process is moving itself along. I suspect that it's not going to be a steady progress. It'll be a slow, incremental one until it hits a certain point in the pathway where there will be a sudden and precipitous fall in the economic well-being of America, all designed to implement this global-to-local system of sustainable development. You must eliminate the middle class for that to happen. And as we look around, we can see the signs that, sure enough, that process is being implemented.
And, of course, this is really one of the major thrusts of the ruling elite. This is why, of course, they're offshoring our jobs. This is why they're, doing away with the pensions, certainly, and benefits for so many employees. This is why they're destroying the value of our currency. But look around you and understand that we've lost, almost... three or four million manufacturing jobs. We only have 20 million manufacturing jobs left in America, and more companies are simply leaving America. It's only a matter of time before China starts building the super jumbo jets, and Boeing and Lockheed are no longer the dominants in that field. Certainly, we no longer dominate automobile manufacturer or the furniture industry or the textile industry. I mean, back following the Second World War, we were 50%, of the manufacturing of the world, and now we're down maybe to 20% of the manufacturing, and as things continue going, soon we'll be behind China within another year. China will be the major manufacturer, and can you blame the companies for moving to China, where they can get the labor so much cheaper, where they don't have the environmental laws, they don't have the pension requirements, they don't have OSHA to put up with, they don't have all of the harassment that they have in this country, and it's all part of a carefully conceived plan. They call it globalism, but it goes right along with this whole idea of sustainable development and Agenda 21 and the equitable distribution of wealth within nations and between nations. That comes right out of the Earth Charter, the new Ten Commandments for the world. Go ahead.
Well, that's exactly right. The guiding document for sustainable development, called the Covenant on Environment and Development, states that equity will be achieved through the implementation of the international economic order and through transfers of resources to developing countries. Their notion is that America must be reduced to the level of wealth of other countries in order for those countries to rise a bit. And of course, that's not how real economics works. It's not a zero-sum game. Genuine economics works on the basis of value added. And what's happening to America is that the value added potential is being stripped away from each and every one of us. But the other economic element of sustainable development is the conduct of business in a, quote, public-private partnership arrangement. Now, when I first heard that, I thought, well, that's preposterous. I mean, Americans know that public-private partnership is exactly the economic theory that was put in place by Benito Mussolini. It was followed on by Adolf Hitler. We called it fascism. Americans aren't likely to jump on a public-private partnership bandwagon. But I can tell listeners around the country that Santa Cruz, as a model for sustainable development, has embarked on a program of housing development where if you're not a partner with the government, taking government funds to build your housing units and insulated from any defect, construction defect liability, if you're not signed up as a public-private partner on housing projects using federal funds to build your money, you won't build houses in Santa Cruz. And that pattern is being repeated all across the country. When you hear affordable housing in your community, that's what it means. It means public-private partnership using tax monies to build housing. It is controlled then by the government. The residents are chosen, and the rules are established by government.
And, of course, they have the affordable housing that, of course, for the people that they give these houses to at less than value. Isn't that nice if you're one of those people who gets a gratuity? Of course, it comes from the developer who's forced to build and sell houses at less than their actual value, if he hopes, of course, to get permission to build other homes. Everything has to be done according to government dictates. Freedom, as we've noted, soon becomes simply a remembrance of things past. Michael, pick the story up there.
All right. Well, a further note on that housing concept. the developers who partner with government don't do all that badly here in Santa Cruz.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mined supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four tape or a four CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that'll protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
You got headaches? Most headaches are caused by a structural weakness of blood vessels in the head, and the blood vessels are tending to balloon, causing a headache. The structural weakness is due to a deficiency. Correct the deficiency and the body will heal itself. I blended what I believed to be the missing nutrients in the right proportions, and the headaches went away. When they were gone, they stayed gone. I named it Headache Stay Gone. See HeadacheStayGone.com or call 800-327-0727 for more information or to place an order. I'll send you a bottle of Headache Stay Gone. Headache Stay Gone will cure your headaches and prevent them from coming back before you pay the bill. Headache Stay Gone has already cured the worst migraines I have ever heard of. Call 800-327-0727. All orders are shipped the same day. Call 800-327-0727. That's 800-327-0727.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Teary. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
The fire saying, we love these trees, that's why we're going to let them burn, so they'll come back again. And of course, well, what about all the little animals there that you're so concerned about in the forest? They just get incinerated. None of this makes any sense unless you understand that the environmentalists, at least at the top, are not interested in the environment. It's all about control. And they're using the danger to the environment to justify expansion of their control over your life in an effort actually to transform our society from a free society into a feudalistic society. Pick up the story there, please.
Well, now that we've covered the three E's, the cornerstone of sustainable development, it's worth looking at how education is being transformed in order to mold the minds of tomorrow. You know, it was Aristotle who said, "All who have meditated on the art of governing mankind have been convinced that the fate of empires depends on the education of youth." Here in Santa Cruz, local newspaper reported last week that now all Santa Cruz classes, beginning in kindergarten, will have an environmental element to them. So if you're a seventh grader, you go to math class, you're going to get an environmental element as you learn how to, as you learn the mathematic techniques. Or if you go to a French class, it's going to be taught to you from an environmentalist perspective. So it's molding the minds of children so that they glob on to the sustainable development dynamic, thinking and becoming believers in the idea that they're actually a burden on the earth, and that free enterprise and economic well-being for human beings is a plight that must be fought by them as they grow older.
And don't forget about the danger of global warming. Oh my goodness, if we don't do something about global warming, why, of course, future generations have no future. And children, in future generations will say, why weren't you involved saving the planet from the threat of global warming?
Well, I'm just going ahead, Sam.
Go right ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that there's an excellent video, and we carry it on our website, freedomadvocates.org, called The Global Warming Swindle, that takes profound scientists in the U.S. and from around the world who debunk the whole global warming myth. Not that we're not having global warming, but they debunk the concept that it's human caused. And we all hear that CO2 emissions are causing the rise in global warming. And the most profound argument that I could understand from this movie was how you take a 1,000-year history of temperature rises and falls and CO2 increases and decreases, and what you find is that warming, that CO2 increases are an effect, not a cause, of warming and cooling.
Now what you're saying is that the warming occurs first and then the CO2 begins to rise.
That's right.
And of course
that's been a pattern for the millennium, repeated again and again.
Okay, and certainly there has been an increase in CO2, but CO2 makes up less than 0.03%, not 0.3%, but 0.03% of our atmosphere. CO2 is 380 parts per million. 380 parts per million, 0.03%. But the environmentalists never tell you that.
Well, when you have a predetermined outcome, damn the facts. And that's been the process here locally, and I suspect locally all around the country, in terms of how the more trained up politicians play with our rules and our whole cultural society. They have an objective, and the end justifies the means when they go to seek the ends of that objective.
Well, I think it's so important that people understand that this whole environmental movement is based upon, you know, the supposition that, you know, if we can frighten the people enough, we can get them to give up their freedom. And certainly there are environmental problems, many of them intentionally created. Certainly there's a shortage of water where we live, or at least the potential for it, because at every turn the environmentalists have blocked the efforts to, you know, to develop the water that we would need for future generations. Our forests are in danger of burning because they've blocked efforts, of course, to clean up our forests so that they won't burn. They create the problem. Vail. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. And go ahead, pick up the story there, Michael.
Well, I want to talk now about stakeholder councils, you know, and their role in implementing sustainable development, and then take a look at the funding sources for sustainable development, and then look at the two main action plans, the so-called Wildlands Project and Smart Growth, to show how these come into communities and take us down this path called Agenda 21. But a stakeholder council is about the methodology for restructuring American government. You know, it was James Madison who said, "I believe there are more instances of the abridgment of freedom of the people by gradual silent encroachments of those in power than by violent and sudden usurpations." Now, a lot of people have a hard time understanding how something that most citizens haven't even heard of, sustainable development, can be the grandest threat to the American ideals in the history of our country. Well, I point them to James Madison and his warning on sustainable development in that statement and others he makes, but that certainly characterizes exactly how it is that the sustainable developers have designed a plan for transforming America. Now, one of the key methodologies they use is what they call stakeholder councils. And I don't think you can go into a community in America, a county across the country, and not find a handful, if not dozens, of these stakeholder councils. Here in Santa Cruz, one of those councils earlier this decade was called the Fire Safe Council, where the federal government was at the table and the county planning department was at the table and all the fire departments were there, and they bring in insurance companies and so-called stakeholders around the community, the Native Plant Society, etc. And the plan was to enforce countywide a habitat conservation plan, which meant that if your land had the possibility, had the prospects for housing, say, a long-toed salamander, you'd have to sign an agreement with the government. An agreement would include stipulations like you won't walk on your property in the wintertime because you might step on one of these salamanders. And if you did that, you'd become a partner and you might be able to do something. And if you didn't do that, well, you were just out of luck. You wouldn't be able to use your property. You wouldn't be able to get a permit to do anything with it.
Hold that thought. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Michael Shaw here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Michael Shaw. And before we go on, Michael, I'd like you to tell our listeners how to get hold of your ministry, how to get hold of your organization, and give your website and, your telephone number, please.
Well, our website is freedomadvocates.org. We used to be known as Freedom 21 Santa Cruz. We've recently changed our name. Our website is loaded with information, not just homegrown information, though there's plenty of that, but information from writers and contributors from across the country and around the world on how sustainable development, what it is and how it's progressing, and what citizens, average citizens, can do to stop it. We have a lot of tools in our store, from pamphlets to videos and other information that you can buy to learn more and understand it better, and distribute it to your community and create some sort of a backbone in your community standing up to this heightening concern that, I really stand. I don't think that America has ever faced such a steep challenge. I wasn't alive in World War II, and I know that was a serious issue for Americans, but this one is from within.
Well, have you heard anything at all about this June bug that's caused? They want to set up a protected area around Mount Hermon to protect some sort of a June bug.
Yeah, I think that's the bug that lives in the ground, only comes out in the month of June.
Right.
And I've had some of these sustainable development activists claim that they might even live down here along the coast in places like La Selva Beach. They come up with every scheme you can imagine predicated upon environmental concerns.
And, of course, it's always the same basic routine. Oh, we can't do this, we can't do that, we can't do something else. We can't put in reservoirs so there won't be a shortage of water. Why, we might damage the Zante humpback slug or maybe the June bugs. So we can't do anything at all about, what's happening as far as roads. We don't want to develop our roads because it's going to, if you develop your roads, then you're going to have more people and more congestion. So we'll just create all sorts of congestion by not developing the roads. And we've seen this over and over again. They block every effort to solve the problems that face our society. Because they don't want solutions, they want problems to justify ever more government control. And they will spend literally millions of dollars on studies. Oh, we'll have another study. I mean, they put out something like $250,000 to study putting in a rail line, at least taking a rail line, that runs about 5 miles, and they said, we're going to be able to finance running trains on this rail line by hauling freight for 5 miles. Cost them $250,000 to come up with that sort of a solution. I mean, it doesn't make any sense, but of course the real objective, and maybe you could even tell our listeners a little bit about why they really want the rail lines here in Santa Cruz.
Well, the rail lines are part of what's called the Smart Growth Program. Sustainable Development has two action programs. One's the Wildlands Project that deals with all the rural areas, and then there's the Smart Growth Program, which is to deal with and handle all the people. Now, to begin this discussion, we've got to take note of the real insider Sustainable Development objective, which is to eliminate up to 95% of the human population. Some of the leading sustainable developers say that the world can only support 1 billion people. Others, like David Foreman, an originator of the Wildlands Project, says that the world can only handle 100,000 human beings. Well, so all of these adverse consequences that we see being implemented need to be understood in the context of this final solution, if you will, that sustainable development brings along, which is a massive reduction in human population. So why not waste the money? Why not implode the dollar? Why not stack everybody in 20-story buildings along a rail line so that it's easy to introduce a disease or drop a bomb to reduce human population?
And of course, people may think that's a little outlandish, but if you'd like to see the pages from Bertrand Russell's book, The Impact of Science on Society, where he talks about, really getting a major black plague going in every generation to kill off a lot of people, because wars and abortion and euthanasia really don't work that well. You can't kill enough. This is Bertrand Russell. Or Jacques Cousteau, who talked about the importance of eliminating 350,000 people a day. Now, if he really said that, why doesn't the local newspaper tell us that? Or why don't, of course, the pundits, the so-called conservative, or the liberal pundits, certainly the liberal pundits, ought to be concerned about a program that would make Adolf Hitler, pale in envy, as suggested by Jacques Cousteau. And it is because the average people are not to understand that one of the major thrusts of this whole environmental movement is the destruction of humankind. And that's why, they want the mountain lions in your backyard. That's why they want the wolves and the grizzly bears. And that's why they want a wild America. But you go ahead, Michael. All of these things tie in together in an intense hatred of civilization, a hatred of humankind.
Well, sustainable development, I always say in talks I give, is the anti-human. If we were to describe it in one phrase, it is simply anti-human. It's a communist form of justice, a fascist form of economics, and to whitewash it all, they proclaim themselves to be saviors of the environment. So these councils come into town with their visioning statements, or consensus statements, and consensus means that everybody goes along, which means that if you don't go along, you're thrown out of the room or you're muzzled somehow. And these visioning statements or consensus statements, which they claim to grow out of the community, are then taken down to your local board of supervisors who in Santa Cruz easily just rubber stamp it, and now all of a sudden this a new form of governance, that is stakeholder councils, end up with exactly what they want. And you say, well, wait a minute. I used to think this too. That doesn't happen because laws are not made by stakeholder councils. They're made by elected representatives. But what's happened in America is whether we're talking about Congress or the Santa Cruz County Board of Supervisors and the boards of supervisors throughout this state and throughout all other states routinely stamp their approval on the findings of predetermined outcomes consensus councils. So you've got to become aware of those stakeholder councils that are rising up in your community and understand where they're coming from, the big picture in which they fit, and take action to expose them, stop them, or otherwise drive them out of town. Because if you don't, they're going to destroy the idea of private property in your community. They're going to change the system of justice.
And of course, they're working in both the Democrat Party and the Republican Party. And these people, I go to these meetings night after night after night. I hate these meetings. I hate the boredom. But they're willing to go to those meetings because they have an agenda. And most people would like to be out having a good time or watching television or watching baseball or basketball. But these people are involved in the political process. And they've taken to heart this slogan, you know, think globally but act locally. And they're organized into little clubs and groups. And, of course, they work and control newspapers. And they're there on the radio, and they're always calling the radio. Or they get on as commentators on the radio, and they're influencing public opinion. And they've really convinced an awful lot of people that global warming is real. They've convinced a lot of people that we have all these crises in our society and shortages of water and shortages of electricity, and we're running out of air and we're running out of oil and we're running out of natural resources. And it doesn't matter how ridiculous something is, if you say it often enough, people eventually come to believe. And then, of course, what's the solution? A whole new series of federal laws or state laws that will control you out there in the audience.
Funding sources for sustainable development and its implementation is very impressive. It goes along with what you're just saying. I mean, American taxes fund the federal agency's present focus, and that's implementing sustainable development. I'm looking at a page from the U.S. Department of Agriculture webpage, and they're very proud to say, we are a sustainable development organization. We're making a sustainable difference. And right on their cover page, they say, you know, we promote the United Nations World Summit on Sustainable Development.
Now, this is supposedly an American the Department of Agriculture.
Yes.
Well, of course, the United Nations is the antithesis of America. I mean, they push a Marxist agenda. I mean, the vast majority of the members there come from Marxist countries. In fact, when Nelson Mandela or Robert Mugabe, who's one of the biggest thugs in America, addresses the United Nations, he gets a rounding applause, as does Fidel Castro. Why would we be following their leadership?
Well, I think you said it a moment ago. It's the Republican and Democrat parties, which are both committed to sustainable development, committed to world government. You have the neoconservatives who say, well, America ought to be running this new world government, whereas the leftists will say, no, the United Nations ought to be running world government. The problem is the philosophy that both of them are relying upon are deeply flawed and very anti-American.
Amen, because the whole idea of America was to limit the power of government so that men could be free. And these people want to increase the power of government so men can be regulated and controlled.
So, you know, the bottom line is that our taxes, huge amount of our taxes, are funding all the federal agencies' efforts to implement sustainable development. It's not just the Department of Agriculture, it's HUD, it's the State Department, who reports to the UN regularly, the American success at achieving sustainable development goals. And the Department of Education is a pure sustainable development department. In fact, the U.S. Department of Education's goal is to make the years 2005 to 2015 the decade of sustainable development education. Here in Santa Cruz, just last week, the paper reported that every grade, every classroom is now to take a focus on the environmental concerns. Now, I don't know how you mix that into a math class, but it's now a requirement of our schools. They do exactly that. And of course, this is the way you get sustainable development education.
This is how you indoctrinate the youth of our country to go along with the agenda of the fascist element in society. Those people of great wealth who would establish a feudal system in what was once the land of the free and the home of the brave.
And other funding sources, the United States has over 2,000 NGOs, non-governmental organizations. Now, these are organizations that have been accredited by the United Nations for purposes of implementing in the United States the Sustainable Development Program. Now, those organizations would include the Nature Conservancy, the Sierra Club, the National Audubon Society, the American Planning Association, and the National Teachers Association. But we're getting it from all sides.
But who is funding them? Because, you know, when you follow the money, you find out who's really going to be in charge. Who is funding all of these environmental organizations that you're talking about?
Well, you know, the third major leg, and I think this is the answer to that question, of the funding is the financial insiders, non-profit, largely tax-exempt family foundations.
Like the Rockefeller with DePue with the Carnegie that you mentioned. And that's really what it's all about, these foundations established by men of great wealth are the ones who are funding so much of this.
Yes, and here on the Central Coast, it's the Packard Foundation. Southern California, it's the Irvine Foundation. You know, MacArthur Foundation. And most communities have now what's called community foundations, you know, which pick up the scraps from, you know, local wealthy people. And their purpose, like the Community Foundation of Santa Cruz, is, again, the implementation of sustainable development policies, the stripping of private property. And they create these conservation easements, which throw a few dollars at a landowner, keep title in their name, keep it on the tax rolls, but control now and forever what they can do with the property. And if the foundation or any third party thinks that a landowner is breaching the terms of the sustainable development conservation easement, the landowner will be sued, ends up paying the legal fees of both sides, and he goes from bad to worse.
And, of course, what they really want to do is control everything. They want to control your property. They want to control how much gasoline you use. They want to control how much water you use. And they're talking about 10 gallons a day for every individual, including washing and drinking and toiletry and all of these things. And everything is to be regulated and controlled from the cradle to the grave. And most people said that's crazy talk. Well, of course, it would be if we were a free society. But these people do not believe in freedom, and of course they are working for people with just unimaginable wealth who have a different vision of America. And it's a much different America than I was raised in, and I think that that most Americans want. But they don't care what the American people want because they're so much smarter than we are.
You know, it's clear that this isn't a dynamic of Republican, Democrat, or liberal, conservative, or left and right. Implementation of sustainable development is occurring on a nonpartisan basis. The big money and the philosophical directives under sustainable development have control of all sides of the political spectrum today.
Amen.
And that's why we stand in sad shape. I mean, all we have is the spirit of knowing what's right. And if we don't begin to take action on that spirit, we're going to find ourselves, our children for certain, in a deep, deep mess.
Well, why don't you get your website out again and your telephone number and repeat them twice.
All right. It's freedomadvocates.org. Our phone number is 831-684-2232.
And freedomadvocates.org. And the telephone number again.
831-684-2232.
And what about now? You have a talk that you gave up, you know, at the Eagle Forum, that I know that it's on a video, and you've got other things. Why don't you tell our listeners just a couple of the things that they could get from your from Freedom Advocates?
Well, we have some pamphlets. Probably the most profound one is our staple is called Understanding Sustainable Development Agenda 21, a guide for public officials. And we've literally had distributed tens of thousands of these all around the country. And where they have located themselves with the most frequency, we find that citizens are beginning to rise up and fighting the battle on the terms that need to be fought. Central Wisconsin, Northern Alabama, and other places where the citizenry has begun to really understand what sustainable development is and are taking hard action to serve their communities and join in the fight to save America.
And, of course, we need to reach our elected representatives, let them understand what this is all about. Because many of them are good Americans, except they're never going to learn the truth from the controlled media. Well, Michael, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, I think what people need to come out of this discussion with understanding is that there is a political movement that really organizes the mass of information that is causing every American citizen difficulty. We can fight each one of those thousand fights, or we can look at the controlling philosophy and those who stand behind it, and begin to inform and educate our fellow citizens so that we can get the root of this noxious plant out of our society. It's a globalist movement. It's called Agenda 21 or Sustainable Development. And until we understand that, we can fight 10 battles over the next year and win all 10 and turn around and find that we've got 990 others to fight. But if you beat sustainable development, understand where it came from and where it's heading us. If we can understand that, we're going to salvage America. We can then make our money system right and restore our freedoms that are already being lost. But we're only at the beginning of that system of losing our liberty if we don't come to a realistic understanding of what sustainable development is and grapple with it, wrestle it to the ground, and stomp it out.
Well, actually, Michael has an excellent talk he gave at Eagle Forum. What's the title of that?
Ooh, I don't remember that. Right now on our front page of the website, we have a talk from me called Understanding Sustainable Development that I gave to the Mises Institute in Alabama.
All right, fine. So anyway, get Michael's material because his talk really on sustainable development is excellent. And it talks not only about, you know, these concepts of what they're doing, but how they are the antithesis of the foundation of America, which said that all men were created equal or endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, among which were life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But this gets right back to the concept of private property and how, you know, this idea that we were given the right to private property was the foundation of freedom. And that right to private property is being eroded. Would that be a fair statement?
That would be an exactly accurate statement. The battle is over private property. It was George Washington who said, freedom and private property are inseparable.
Amen to that, and we're out of time. Michael, thank you so much for being with us. Our guest has been Michael Schwalm, and Michael will be back with us again next month as we explore this whole concept of encroachment on the freedoms of the American people as we move from freedom towards feudalism and fascism. And only the American people can take America back. Well, Michael, again, thank you so much for being with us. We'll let you go and appreciate it.
Well, I thank you, Stan, and appreciate everything that you do.
Bye-bye. Oh, okay, fine. That was Michael Schwalm. And, of course, he'll be with us again next month. But this is the time when I need to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and if you're out there listening to our program, we hope many of you will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters. And then, of course, we actually have a syllabus on sustainable development that gives you the Earth Charter, which is the Mein Kampf. It is really the master plan behind this whole idea of sustainable development and using the environmental situation to create a dictatorship in America. It contains a summary of the Global Biodiversity Report, the World Bank Water Policy, my Population Control Agenda monograph, information on the Georgia Guidestones, and so much more that you need to know about what's really going on. This is a master plan coordinated across the world to transform the world from freedom to fascism. And so now the sustainable development syllabus really should be read in conjunction with my talk on sustainable development. It's on video. And then, of course, we have a 4-tape set on sustainable development. And then, of course, you need to understand the population control agenda. Now, the monograph is included in the syllabus, but we have a talk called Planned Population Reduction, 2.25 hours. A talk we gave at the Prophecy Club. I think it's one of the best exposés of what's going on. We have another DVD or video put up by Dr. Ayoub. Dr. Ayoub is a radiologist who's been studying this. It's called Mercury Autism and the Global Population Control Agenda. And when you get that, of course, you get a CD-ROM that has literally thousands of pages of documents on the background between mercury and population control and autism and Alzheimer's disease, and they know exactly what they're doing. They just don't want you to know. Why do you think that the same people are pushing population control and vaccinating all those little black children in third world countries? What do they know that you don't know about mercury and vaccinations? And then, of course, another excellent source of information would be a DVD put out by Joyce Riley called Beyond Treason, talking about depleted uranium that they're using to poison our troops and the people of Iraq, along with a CD-ROM that contains thousands of pages of government documentation. It's all there. You'll never hear about it in your local newspaper. You'll never read about it. Never hear about it on your local television station. But the truth about depleted uranium, there's no question at all that we're poisoning our own troops. Why would anybody do that? Because they have an intense hatred for America and everything America stands for. And if you were to poison our young men, who would there be fight for freedom when America comes under attack here in this country? So all of these things we're talking about are available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. And the way that they're able to get away with this is because it sounds so absurd. I mean, why would anybody do something like that? Well, let me ask you, why is it that by the time our young men come back from the current war in Iraq, within 3 months, a third of them are ill and with some sort of a chronic illness, and the VA just doesn't have enough facilities to treat them all, so they give them Prozac and pat them on the head and tell them they got post-traumatic stress or personality disorders. But if you want the verification, we'll give it to you. Why is it that 78,000 of the young men from Gulf War I are now dead, according to the Veterans Administration? And we'll be glad to give you their figures. Give us a call and ask for the information on the Gulf War veterans from the Veterans Administration. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. We're involved in the spiritual battle, and there really are evil and wicked people out there. Pray for America. Pray for revival, but please pray for Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Christian civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion is illusion. That'll determine what the future will bring, and I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and hopefully they're going to be the views of our guest for the second hour, and that's our good friend Bill Federer, who has written a number of amazing books, and one of them, of course, is What Every Christian Should Know About the History of Islam, and certainly we are looking forward to having him with us. We always enjoy Bill, certainly in his views, and he's done an amazing job of chronicling the whole history of Islam, and of course, really how it played such an important part on so much of Western civilization. For instance, it was in 1492, the very year that the Muslims were driven out of Spain, that Columbus launched his effort to reach India. And of course, one reason why they wanted to reach India by boat was because they couldn't go eastward, because they wanted to reach Asia and of course China and get the products that they had for trade, but they couldn't get through the Muslim countries. So there is, of course, the effort was then to go westward. And certainly there have been many conflicts between the Muslim world and Christianity in recent years. But right now, of course, let's see if we can find a Bill Federer, get him on, as we begin talking about the history of the Muslim world and its relationship to Christianity. And, of course, most people don't even know what the Byzantine Empire was. Of course, it was a Christian empire. It was the eastern half of the Roman Catholic Church that certainly broke off, and eventually it was about 1067, somewhere there. Why, of course, they formed their own separate religion, the Greek Orthodox Church, and they broke with Rome. And then, of course, long after Rome had been destroyed, why the Byzantine Empire prospered in the Near East and was the dominant force there. And then, of course, the Ottoman Empire came along. It was the Turkish Empire, and that was destroyed after the end of the Second World War. But what most people don't understand is that there really was very little conflict between the Muslim world and the Christian world. And 10 years ago, did you hear about Islamic radicals trying to destroy the West or blow up our cities? And this was a non-existent threat. But certainly this threat has been growing, and why? Well, because, you know, you get what you finance, and when the government, CIA, financed the Mujahideen all during the 1980s, and these were Muslim warriors and taught them all about how wonderful it was to die for Allah, and when the U.S. Agency for International Development invested $52 million in textbooks to be used in the madras schools throughout Afghanistan and Pakistan to indoctrinate the youth in how wonderful it was to kill the infidels like you and me, why would the USAID do something like that? And then, of course, when the CIA and the Pakistanis and the Saudis financed the Taliban and financed Al-Qaeda, why have we gradually begun, of course, to create increasing animosity? So anyway, we're hoping we're going to be able to get the bill on. If we don't, why, you can give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, and we'll be glad to talk to you about really whatever you'd like to talk about. So right now, we're going to go to a slight break and look forward to hearing from you. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest apparently is not going to be available, so we will go on from here, and hopefully we'll be able to have some of you call in. But as we go back and we examine, of course, the enemy of the Muslim world. It's so reminiscent of how we got an enemy out of communism. Why was communism the enemy of the West? Well, what you have to understand is that the West financed communism from its very inception back in 1917. And those of you who have read my book, it was The Brotherhood of Darkness, or the book written by a man named Bruce Lockhart called British Agent. Bruce Lockhart was actually sent to Leningrad or to Moscow immediately after the French Revolution by Lord Milner, who had actually financed the first Russian Revolution. That was the March Revolution. And if you read my book, we give you all the documentation and the people who had written back in 1917 and 1918 about how Lord Milner had financed the Russian Revolution. Now, why would Lord Milner, who was, of course, one of the major architects of this movement that Cecil Rhodes created to bring about a world government, why would he have financed the Russian Revolution? Very simply, to do away with the Russian monarchy, and then, of course, to create a Marxist enemy that the West could rail against, because you have to have an enemy in effort if you're going to rally the people behind the government. And, of course, this has been said many times in one way or another. I mean, Plato talked about this in his Republic, where he wrote, you know, when the tyrant has defeated the enemy by conquest or by treaty and there's nothing to fear from him, and then, of course, he's always rounding up another enemy so he can rally the people behind him. It's the oldest technique in the world. Lincoln Bloomfield, writing back, I think, in 1962 in an article he prepared for the State Department, said that, you know, if communism didn't exist, we would have to create something similar to that, because if we didn't have communism, why, we would have lost the major dynamic moving us towards world government. And this is really what it's all about. You need an enemy to rally the people, so you can rally the people behind the government, so they'll be willing to pay massive amounts of taxes to be protected from the wicked enemy. You read George Orwell's 1984, and there was a fellow named Goldberg. He was the enemy of Big Brother, and everybody would always shudder whenever they saw him. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and so we're going to have to do open lines for this hour. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-2295. And I was simply using the analogy of you have to have an enemy. After all, if we didn't have an enemy, how would we get the American people to be willing to put out the massive amount of money that you spend on our military? The United States spends more money on its military than all the rest of the nations of the world combined. The United States spends more money on its military than all the rest of the nations of the world combined. Would the American people be willing to finance that, massive military with, of course, massive numbers of aircraft carriers and missiles and planes and some 700 bases throughout the world and troop stations in 130 countries? Would we really be willing to finance all of that if we didn't perceive that communism was the enemy? And now that communism is the enemy, now we have a new enemy. He's known as Osama bin Laden. And, of course, he's hiding in a cave somewhere in Pakistan. And we've got to transform America because of the danger that Osama bin Laden has. And everybody knows, of course, that he, recruited 19 hijackers, 19 terrorists, and sent them to America to destroy the World Trade Center and the Pentagon and perhaps the White House on the 11th of September 2001. Well, everybody knows that, except, of course, the Federal Bureau of Investigation. If that were really true, and remember what I've outlined as the government conspiracy theory, the government said that Osama bin Laden conspired and all these Arab hijackers conspired, to attack America. You would think that if that had really taken place, that by this time the FBI would know that. Wouldn't you think that? So I would challenge you to go to the FBI webpage on the Internet, and you can simply Google in FBI, and 10 most wanted, and there you'll come to the page where they have the pictures of the 10 most wanted men in America, and one of them is the wicked Osama bin Laden. And you pull up the picture of the wicked Osama bin Laden, and they list there what he's wanted for. What do you think Osama bin Laden is wanted for? If you have any thoughts on this, give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Now, if you read the page there on the FBI's 10 Most Wanted, what do you find? Well, Osama bin Laden is wanted in conjunction because of his involvement and his planning for the attack on the embassies in Africa in 1998 in Kenya and Tanzania. But the amazing thing is that there's no mention of the attack on America on September 11, 2001. They say that possibly he may have been involved with other terrorist activities throughout the world. Possibly involved in other terrorist activities throughout the world. But the president told us that Osama bin Laden was behind what happened on September 11th. You mean the FBI doesn't know what happened on September 11th? Either the FBI is lying to the American people, or that somebody in the Bush administration is deceiving the American people about what happened. Because, of course, the reason that we went to war with Afghanistan was because Osama bin Laden had recruited 19 terrorists to attack the United States. But if the FBI won't even put that up on their webpage, is it possible that we haven't been told the truth? That it was a mistake when we went into Afghanistan, and, of course, we were going to, you know, take out Osama bin Laden, but we never tried to take out Osama bin Laden. And if you read the books that were written at that time, and we have one book called Crude Politics, I'm not sure if we still have any copies, but we probably still do. You can call and inquire. And, of course, this author of the book, I think his name was Paul Sperry, and he was the Washington correspondent for the World Net Daily at that time. And he had talked to the men who'd come back from Afghanistan with special forces, and what did they tell him? Why, they tell them that we were not allowed to go after Osama bin Laden. We wanted to go after Osama bin Laden. We weren't allowed to, and Osama bin Laden escaped into Pakistan, and we didn't pursue him there. Now, a four-star Marine General Zinni, and we quote him in a couple of our newsletters, and if you want to know which ones, you simply go up and Google in Radio Liberty General Zinni, and you'll actually get the quotations that we have from General Zinni. General Zinni said Iraq was of no danger to America. I mean, it had no military potential. We'd been bombing it regularly for 10 years. I had access to all of the intelligence. Iraq was not a danger to the United States. We should have gone after al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden and ended the war on terrorism. It was a mistake to go into Iraq. Well, I would like to suggest that maybe it wasn't a mistake at all. Maybe this is what it was all about. Maybe the real objective was to justify a war with Afghanistan so we could then somehow justify a war with Iraq, so that then we would be able to justify a war with Iran and then with the whole of the Muslim world. That is my contention. And hope and pray that I'm wrong. I really do. I really, if I ever wanted to be wrong in anything, I would want to be wrong on this. But of course, see, if we go to war with the Muslim world, it will have disastrous consequences as far as the economy, as far as the survival, as far as the integrity of our own nation. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But let's go to David, who's calling from Michigan. Hi, David. How are you doing?
Hello, Dr. Stan. I'm doing quite well. Thank you.
What part of Michigan are you from?
I'm from a town called National City by Tallis. I'm listening from driving through Flint right now.
Okay, fine. Well, I'm glad to have you with us. You have a question or comment?
Well, I have. I'd like to ask your opinion. I've always been curious about the invisible war that's going on for mankind. And I know that there is powers and principalities that are behind a lot of this. And I think of like the powers that might be influencing the industrialists, and those that might be influencing, say, the Muslims or the radicals. Do you think there are fallen angels that might be sort of like playing a chess match with these warlords and different armies?
Absolutely. I mean, we are fighting a spiritual battle on a political, ideological, and cultural battlefield, but there really are there is another dimension, and of course there are beings from that other dimension, and they are working and controlling the leaders of the Islamic world, specifically Ahmadinejad and the mullahs, and convince them, of course, that the Mahdi is going to return on the 24th of August. They got to get into a war before then, so the Mahdi will return, and of course they are influencing the leaders on our side, whether they knowingly or unknowingly, are being led into this quagmire. And I fear that there are going to be disastrous consequences for our country. And yet, you know, God allows these things to happen. And many times you read the Old Testament, you'll find that when the children of Israel turned against God, God used the Assyrians to come and conquer them and take them away into slavery. Or he used the Babylonians to come in and capture the children of Israel and lead them away to slavery. And God many times uses evil and wicked people for his purpose. And I really believe that God is going to bring his judgment on our country. I believe that is exactly what's going on there. And if you have not had a chance to read my February newsletter of February 2007, it's up on the webpage at RadioLiberty.com, and it gives you, I think, a very good summary of exactly what you said, only it gives you the opportunity to read what the people on the other side say. And I'm here now talking about the people who are in contact with these beings from the other dimension.
Okay.
And now, do you listen to our program regularly, David?
Yes, every chance I get.
Okay, great.
Online. One question. I know there are a lot of very concerned people like yourself and maybe Alex Jones and some different ones. Do you think there is a chance that there will be enough momentum gathered through enough people that care that we may be spared until the rapture, possibly as a nation?
Well, I would hope that there would be, but I right now, unless there's a great revival in America, I don't see any hope that we can escape God's wrath on this nation. I wish it weren't true, but you asked me my opinion. On the other hand, you know, if there were a revival, if we could begin changing people, and remember, if we're going to change America, we've got to start one person at a time, starting with you and me. We've got to begin changing our attitudes and hope what we do will influence others, and that will influence others. And revival has come to America before. Revival could come to America again, but I just don't see the leadership out there in our Christian community. And even Jerry Falwell, who I had the greatest respect for, began to compromise his position to become more popular, and he would ask people like Newt Gingrich to come and address his people there at his Liberty University. Where are the giants here in the Christian community today? Can you think of any of them?
No, I hope for people like Tom Tancredo, possibly, that might step forward.
But he's working from a political point of view, and remember, I mean, we're dealing with this from a spiritual point of view, because it's a spiritual battle. And I think Tom Cantrell is a very good man. And I think Ron Paul's a very good man. But if it's a spiritual battle, we need spiritual leadership. We need political leadership, too. But the most thing is we need spiritual leadership, and I just don't see it out there.
We'll need a miracle, that's for sure.
Well,
and we need to keep hope, I believe.
All right,
hold that
for a minute.
Thank you.
Okay, Dave, do you have anything else you wanted to say?
No, I was just curious about, I have founded a foundation, and I thought about doing some micro radio transmission. Do you have any input on that at all?
There are actually a lot of radio stations are coming up, legal ones, and if you're interested, well, you can call me off the air and I can get you information on that. Well, these will be coming up in about 6 months, and certainly if you go micro, you always worry that the government's going to come after you because it's an unlicensed station. But you can get a small station. That's how we started out here. My ministry started out with a small licensed station, and then, of course, we expanded to where we are today, buying time on many other people's stations. But certainly, if you can call me off the air, and I'll be glad to send you the material on that. They're opening up again, as I say, probably 5 or 6 months from now. A large number of these will be they'll be small stations, but you could put together a network of these, and it would be something well worthwhile doing. And I'd be glad to offer free of charge our programmers for at least part of that, and there are other good programs that you'd be able to get. And so then, of course, there are other groups that are doing very similar things. But what we really need, of course, is a network of radio stations, legitimate radio stations across America, that are getting the truth out to the Christian population. That we really don't have now. There are a few of them that we are affiliated with that are doing a pretty good job. But believe me, it's very expensive to be on those stations. And certainly the American Family Network, Don Wildman, is doing an excellent job with his network of about 130 stations. You could do the same, and you could get some help, and we'd be glad to give you any advice we can. But right now is the time you're going to have to begin looking at it.
Okay, that's what I was hoping to hear from you.
All right, fine.
As far as I know, there's only two stations in Michigan that's carrying your program, and it's really disheartening. I would like to see it all over the state.
Well, I didn't know there were even two of them. I know that we have the one there, the Flint station, and we used to have a second one in Detroit, but they sold the station. However, we do have the Internet. We do have shortwave. So we thank the Lord for what we have, and we're not going to be complaining. But at least we have a voice, and there we are very, very grateful to the Christian Broadcasting Station, and, of course, to the stations up in Washington that carry our program for the first hour. So the first hour of our evening program is actually on nine stations, nine commercial station, one nonprofit station, and shortwave and the Internet. So it gives us pretty good outreach. And,
wonderful.
So we'll be glad to help you in any way we can. And you can call our 800 number, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. We'd be glad to talk to you.
I appreciate that so much, and I'll give you a call tomorrow.
Okay, bye-bye. Okay,
thanks,
again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you have something you'd like to talk about or question or comment, maybe you disagree with what we're saying. And, of course, people don't like to hear but things like I told David. Well, I told him what I believe. I'm not going to come on here and water things down or say a lot of things I don't believe. I believe God is going to bring judgment. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Again, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And if you would be interested in giving us a call, I'm glad to talk to you about really anything, question that you have. But I am very, very concerned that we are on the verge of a war in the Middle East. Now, it was very interesting that they're keeping totally secret from the American people what's really happening over in the Gulf. We're told that we had two battle units over there. Initially, we had the Eisenhower, and I think it was the Stennis, and then, of course, we brought the Nimitz Task Force in to replace the Eisenhower Task Force. But then we didn't know what happened to the Eisenhower Task Force. That was kept a secret. Well, it was just this last week when Bob Chapman mentioned that the Eisenhower Task Force had sailed up through the Suez Canal, had gone into the Mediterranean, and was now heading home, which theoretically left us with two task forces over there, each one with about eight ships. Only, as so often happens, they're lying. They didn't mention the Boxer task force, and the Boxer is a much older carrier, and they had about 7 ships with them, and a large Marine contingent, of course, thousands of Marines just waiting to be put ashore, and then there's a French aircraft carrier in the Gulf as well, so there are actually 4 aircraft carriers in the Gulf. An amazing, frightening concentration of military air power that certainly is unparalleled in modern times. And I can't believe this is all just to scare the Iranians, because they know that the Iranians are not afraid of going to war with the United States, because they look at the world differently than you and I do. They look it through the lens of the Muslim faith, which basically says that, you know, the only way to be sure that you're going to get to heaven, of course, is to die in battle, die at jihad against the enemy. And then, of course, they really believe the only way, and at least the Shia Muslim believes the only way that they're going to be able to bring the Mahdi back. And the Mahdi is the equivalent of the Jesus for the Christian, the Messiah for the Jew, or the Maitreya for the Buddhist, or Krishna for the India. They all believe that there's going to be this world leader. So certainly the Buddhist believes in Maitreya. The Indian believes in Krishna. The Muslim believes in the Mahdi. The Jew believes in the Messiah. And of course, the Christian is waiting for the return of Jesus Christ. But the Muslims really believe, at least the Shia brand of Muslims, at something called the Hijatua Society, which is sort of an extremist group, believes that the Mahdi is going to come back in August of this year. Now, I'm not saying that this is really going to happen, but they believe that the only way that they're going to be able to do that is to precipitate a nuclear confrontation. Well, I would want to pick a fight with somebody who really wanted to do something like that and bring, you know, all sorts of fire down upon their heads. These are the last people you want to, of course, deal with militarily. What you want to do, of course, is topple their government. And if we've waited long enough, I really think we could do it. I mean, there's tremendous unrest in Iran. Most of the Iranian people would love to get rid of the mullahs. And they can't do it because of the mullahs' secret police. Who are the mullahs' secret police? Why, they're the secret police that the CIA organized for the Shah. And when we brought the Shah to power, and when the mullahs came in, remember, we toppled the Shah and brought the mullahs to power, while the mullahs, of course, simply absorbed the secret police was organized for the Shah, and they've just been as ruthless against the Iranian people under the mullahs as they were when the Shah was there. And none of this makes sense unless there are other spiritual forces at work behind the scenes. And if you doubt that we actually toppled the Shah and brought the Ayatollah Khomeini to power, we just found a wonderful article in the Washington Post that confirms what I have always said. And of course, this is written by a man who knew the Shah and was told exactly what I've said by the Shah of Iran. And we'd be glad to send you a copy of that article, an article about how, of course, the mullah's secret police was originally organized by the CIA. How could that be? Because nothing is it appears to be. Everything is illusion and delusion. And behind everything, these powerful spiritual forces. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. We do not have a prepared program. And if you don't call us in, why? Well, anyway, give us a call. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Right here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan Becker at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. And, of course, we're accepting calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But what people really don't understand is that nothing is as it appears to be. My February 2007 letter and many previous letters that I've written have stressed the fact that the occult hierarchy that rules our world and the world began financing communism from the time of its inception back in 1917, and they've massively increased American funding of the Soviet Union and, of course, the Eastern European satellites during the Vietnam War era, so the Russians could finance the North Vietnamese, who then funded the Viet Cong, who killed American soldiers in the rice paddies and villages of South Vietnam. And, of course, that's exactly what's going on in Afghanistan today. In Afghanistan, the United States government is funding the Pakistani government, that's funding Pakistani intelligence, the ISI, that's funding the Taliban, that is killing American soldiers in the poppy fields and villages of Afghanistan. And, of course, we're told, oh, well, Musharraf, he's our ally, and he's going to do something about that, or he is doing something about that. Oh, yes, but this has been going on for 5.5 years, ladies and gentlemen. 5.5 long years. The ISI has been funding the Taliban that have been fighting the Americans. Maybe we ought to reevaluate our position. Maybe we ought to look and see what's really going on in between Russia and Iran. Now, who is funding Russia today? Russia has become the largest exporter of oil and natural gas in the world, and now has somewhere between $240 and $400 billion in reserves. I think Bob Chapman said the other day $380 billion. How have the Russians been able to accomplish that? Why, you'll be very proud to know it's your tax money. And, of course, you'll want to get my April newsletter, which I simply point out that even today, when America is having to borrow almost $3.5 billion every single day to meet our requirements, we're still giving over $2 billion every day directly to Russia and the former Soviet states. And then, of course, they're getting money from the Export-Import Bank that is financing the American corporations that have built the oil wells and the gas wells for Russia. We have built the pipelines for them, and, of course, the major pipeline that's... And we'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we were simply talking about how the American government has built up and is still financing Russia. And, of course, we'll get into that a little bit more, but let me put out our telephone number. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And since I don't have anything prepared, why, give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. And as we pointed out so many times before, it was during the Vietnam War when of course, the American government was funding and sending large amounts of money and technology and supplies to the Soviet Union, that at that time was funding the North Vietnamese, who were funding the South Vietnamese, were killing American boys in the rice paddies in the villages of South Vietnam, just as today we're funding the Pakistanis, we're funding the Pakistani ISI intelligence that's funding the Taliban that are killing American boys in the poppy fields and villages of Afghanistan. But even more amazing is the fact what's happening with Russia. Russia is providing sophisticated weapons for Iran, and to a lesser extent for Syria, is funding all sorts of technicians going there. And Russia has given Iran some very, very sophisticated anti-aircraft missiles with which they can shoot down our planes when they come in to attack. They've given them the long-range missiles that, of course, it will allow Iran to reach Israel with their highly explosive devices and very accurate missiles. They've also given them the short-range missiles, which Iran then is sending to both Syria and to the Hamas and Hezbollah, which, of course, and those weapons will be used against Israel and the United States in the coming war over there. Now, And then, of course, Iran has given Israel some, pardon me, Russia has given Iran some very, very sophisticated weapons that would be a ship to ship. And although Iran only has, I think, 4 diesel-powered submarines armed with these sophisticated Russian weapons, many of these would be able to have the capacity to take out our carriers here in the Gulf. And not only that, but there are other weapons that the Iran has received from Russia. They can be put on their very small, fast boats like the old PT boats, and those, of course, would be able to attack our carriers. And in war games that simulate a war between Iran and the United States, why the Iranians have won those battles. So our military knows, of course, that these weapons that the Russians have given to the Iranians are potentially lethal to our aircraft carriers. So why are we putting so many aircraft carriers in the Gulf? What do you think would happen to America if we were to lose one aircraft carrier? Or 2 aircraft carriers? Think of the psychological impact upon the morale of the American people. And then, of course, how the people would rally behind the government against the wicked enemy, whoever that might be. Now, then, of course, where is Russia getting the technology and the money to do this? Well, as we pointed out, Russia has become the largest exporter of oil and natural gas in the world as of right now, and has tremendous reserves. But despite that fact, the United States government in the year 2007 is giving over $2 billion to Russia, just giving it outright, you know, to Russia and the former Soviet states. In addition, we have all sorts of other funds, funds for fighting AIDS, funds for the Department of Energy, so that we can protect Russia's nuclear arsenal from the wicked Osama bin Laden. Funds so that we can guard their biological warfare. Funds so that we can guard their chemical warfare agents. And then, of course, there's the Export-Import Bank that is funded with your tax money, that has funded the oil exploration and natural gas exploration in the Soviet Union. That is built, at least in part, on the massive pipelines that are allowing Russia to export oil and natural gas. And this is all funded by the Export-Import Bank, by the World Bank, by the International Monetary Fund, by the Asian Development Bank, all funded with your money. Your tax money, American tax money, has been creating the best enemy money could buy. And then, of course, the American corporations have been going over there. American banks have been advancing money to the Russians. The Chase Manhattan Bank, at least according to Mr. Feldersinski, I interviewed the other day, was saying that Chase Manhattan Bank had been instrumental in building this massive pipeline that is bringing Russian natural gas into Europe, and of course then has made Europe dependent upon Russia. And of course what was so interesting to me is when I talked to Mr. Feldersinski, who along with Alexander Vitkinenko, the gentleman who was poisoned recently by the KGB. But Feldersinski, Yuri Feldersinski, was saying that if you go outside of Moscow about 1 hour by car out of Moscow, you're back in the 19th century Russia. Nothing has changed. No development. And he made that statement in a couple of the programs I did with him and got me thinking, how could it possibly be that, you know, an hour out of Moscow, you're back in the 19th century Russia? I mean, we think of Russia being a very advanced technologically, but apparently it's not. Feldersinski was a Russian. He was raised there. He takes frequent trips back there. He speaks fluent Russian. He's a historian living in the United States and teaching at one of our major universities. But the point he made is that Russia is incredibly feudal and underdeveloped, you know, in the infrastructure of its society. So then how this disparity? How could Russia be the largest exporter of oil and natural gas in the world and yet be so underdeveloped? And it's simply because it's all been done by American corporations, by American banks, and, of course, by all of these international agencies, as we've mentioned them, the World Bank, the Export-Import Bank, the International Monetary Fund, the Asian Development Bank, and they've got all sorts of vehicles by which America can finance Russia, formerly the Soviet Union, so the Russia can finance Iran, so the Iranians can get the weapons that will be used against American soldiers and naval units in the coming war in the Middle East. And it's just like what's going on in Afghanistan today. It's just like what happened in Vietnam during the Vietnamese War. It's like deja vu all over again. And if you're looking for a logical explanation of this, there is none. In fact, there's no logical explanation why leaders should be manipulating us into a war with Iran when we were the ones who brought the Ayatollahs to power. We were the ones who created this radical, brutal, police force, secret unit that they have that oppresses the people. I guess they call them the Revolutionary Guard or whatever it is. But, I mean, we created this whole thing. This was a CIA creation that the Ayatollahs just picked up and kept it going. And none of this makes sense unless, of course, there are other forces there that we are not allowed to understand. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And unless you, of course, go back in history and study what has happened in the past, you certainly can't understand what's going on today. In fact, it was George Bernard Shaw who said that Hegel was right when he said that we learn from history that man can never learn anything from history. Well, Congressman Larry McDonald, back in 1975, had written, and I quote, "The United States has provided over $1 billion in foreign aid and assistance to the Soviet Union from 1946 to 1974. Presumably, this was done under the authority other than the Foreign Assistance Act, which prohibits such aids. But when you also consider the so-called Lend-Lease program, so-called because, as things turned out, it was neither lend nor lease, but outright charity to the tune of between $11 to $12 billion, and the passing over our past World War II occupation of currency production capability, the true figure of aid to the heartland of totalitarian communism would be somewhere between $30 to $40 billion. Most Americans are staggered upon learning that the USSR has been the number one beneficiary of U.S. aid in this century. And, of course, that is very true. We have financed the best enemy money could buy, and as Lincoln Bloomfield said back in 1962, if we didn't have communism, you know, as an opponent, we'd have to create it. Because, of course, communism is the greatest boom to our whole idea of creating this world government. And that's what it's really all about. A one world government, a new world religion, and of course this coming world leader. Now most Americans aren't aware of the fact that at the end of World War II, the U.S. Treasury gave the Soviet Union duplicate copies of the U.S. printing plates that were used to grant to print occupation money. And then funded Russia's rape, pillage, and occupation of Eastern Europe. And that's covered in a book called From Major Jordan's Diary, and I've actually read the government reports on that. This was arranged by Henry Morgenthau. We actually financed the Russian occupation and rape and pillage of Eastern Europe, and believe me, literally every woman there was raped. I've talked to some of them who were there at the time, all funded with your tax money. Now, sometime later, when the Soviet occupation of Eastern Europe ended, then the U.S. had to pay hundreds of millions of dollars to redeem the currency the Russians had printed with the place we gave them. How could you conceal something like that from the American people? Well, you control the media. That's how you do it. To help you understand what's taking place today in my March newsletter, I reproduced the text of a speech that Professor Anthony Sutton had delivered to the Republican Party Platform Committee on August 15, 1972. That was 2.5 years before the U.S. abandoned Vietnam, which occurred, of course, on April 30, 1975. And this is what Professor Sutton said, and If you're not going to call in, you're going to have to hear what Professor Sutton said. Our telephone number, once again, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But I'm going to quote here now from Professor Anthony Sutton. The information I'm about to present to you this afternoon is known to the administration. The information is probably not known to the senator from South Dakota or to his advisors. And in this instance, ignorance may be blessing in disguise. I'm not a politician. I'm not going to tell you what you want to hear. My job is to give you the facts. Whether you like or dislike what I say doesn't concern me. I'm here because I believe, and Congressman Ashbrook believes, that the American public should have these facts. I spent 10 years in research into the Soviet technology. What is it? What it can do, and particularly, where did it come from? And I published 3 books and several articles summarizing that work, and it was privately financed, but the results have been available to the government. On the other hand, I've had major difficulties with U.S. government censorship. In a few words, there is no such thing as Soviet technology. Almost all, perhaps 90 to 95%, of Soviet technology came directly or indirectly from the United States and its allies. In effect, the United States and the NATO countries have built the Soviet Union, its industrial and military capabilities. This massive construction job has taken 50 years. Since the revolution in 1917, it has been carried out through trade and the sale of plants, equipment, and technological assistance. Listening to the administration spokesman or some newspaper pundits, you get the impression that trade with the Soviet Union is some new miracle cure for the world's problems. But that's not quite accurate. The idea that trade with the Soviets might bring peace goes back to 1917, and the earliest proposal is dated December of 1917, just a few weeks after the start of the Bolshevik Revolution. It was implemented in 1920 while the Bolsheviks were still trying to consolidate their hold on Russia. The result was to guarantee that the Bolsheviks held power, and they needed foreign supplies to survive. The history of our construction of the Soviet Union has been blacked out. Much of the key information is still classified, along with the other mistakes of the Washington bureaucracy. Why has the history been blacked out? Because 50 years of dealing with the Soviets has been an economic success for the USSR and a political failure for the United States. It has not stopped war. It's not given us peace. The United States is spending $80 million a year on defense against an enemy which is built by the United States and Western Europe. Even stranger, the U.S. apparently wants to make sure this enemy remains the business of being an enemy. Now, at this point, I've probably lost some of you. What I've said is contrary to everything you've heard from the intellectual elite, the administration, and the business world, and the numerous well-regarded senators, just about everyone. But let me bring you back to earth. For an authentic statement, it's authentic because it's part of the conversation between Stalin and W. Averill Harriman. And remember, Ambassador Harriman had been a prominent in Soviet trade since the 1930s and is an outspoken supporter of yet more trade. This is what Ambassador Harriman reported back to the State Department at the end of World War II. And I quote, "Stalin paid tribute to the assistance rendered by the United States the Soviet industry before and during the war. Stalin said that about two-thirds of all the large industrial enterprises in the Soviet Union had been built with the United States' help or technical assistance." And then he goes on to say that, I repeat, two-thirds of all the large industrial enterprises in the Soviet Union had been built with the United States' help or technological assistance. Two-thirds. 2 out of 3. Stalin could have said that the other third of the large industrial enterprises were built by firms from from Germany or from France or Britain and Italy. Stalin could have said also that the tank plants, the aircraft plants, and explosives and ammunition plants originated in the U.S. That was June of 1944. The massive technological assistance continues right down to the present day. And now the ability of the Soviet Union to create any kind of military machine, to ship missiles to Cuba, to supply arms to North Vietnam, to supply arms for use against Israel, all of this depends on its domestic industry. And in the Soviet Union, about three-quarters of the military budget goes to purchase this from Soviet factories, and this expenditure in Soviet industry makes sense. And then he goes on to describe the Soviet military-industrial complex. Well, this is Dr. Stan and Chris Weaver just reading from my April newsletter. I hope any of you want to get our March newsletter. I hope any of you want to get the March newsletter. The April newsletter will be done very, very soon, which goes into the background of how we're still building up the Soviet Union. But we can't let the American people know that. Why? Because they might begin to see through this whole incredible charade, the creation of the best enemies that money could buy. And certainly, if you've not yet read, of course, Professor Sutton's excellent book, The Best Enemies Money Could Buy, or seen my interview with him that was done before he passed away, The Best Enemies Money Could Buy, they are available from Radio Liberty. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. Professor Sutton's book, Wall Street and the Bolshevik Revolution, is so revealing. There's no question at all that the whole infrastructure of Russia was financed and built by American corporations. The Federal Reserve Bank, our banks, we were building up an enemy because we needed an enemy if we were going to move towards the New World Order, the New World Religion, and the New World Leader. So certainly, Professor Sutton had written a trilogy, was published by the Hoover Institute, called Western Technology and Soviet Economic Development, and it is still, my understanding, it's in print by the Hoover Institute. It was last time I checked. They're expensive because they don't want people to buy them, but you can get that, but you can also get the summaries. But we've done a good job, I think, of summarizing so much of the material and information in my March newsletter. And, of course, it's available up on the Internet at RadioLiberty.com. And the April newsletter will be available probably in another couple of weeks. You need to understand that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. And most of what you think you know is not really what's happened. And it's so difficult for people to understand that all this talk about the danger of communism and how we've just got to protect ourselves from the communists, we've got to have a strong military, this is all a diversion. It is because we presume that the communists, who we've created and are financing, are a threat to us, that we justify the massive military expenditures we have. Troops in 130 nations, 700 or more military bases throughout the world today. And, of course, we spend more money on our military than all the West of the countries in the world together. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course, this is the time I need to remind our listeners, Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported. If you're out there in the listening audience, you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters and help us as we try to maintain our almost 60 outlets every single week, and that includes internet, shortwave, radio stations, certainly the satellite hookup where you can hear us actually 9 hours a day, and we've got three or four internet hookups. I know we have one on the American Freedom Network. With GCN, we have Radio Liberty, we have Soundwave 2000, and yet we have Global Star Internet, so I guess we have five internets that you can hear some or many of our programs on. And we want you, of course, to get that information and then help us to get it out across America. But If you'd like to become a partner in this effort, again, our number is 1-800-544-8927. If you can't afford to, you can always pull down our material off the internet at RadioLiberty.com. You have our permission to copy it, as long as you're not making a profit. Although, some fellow wrote the other day, and he said he got our DVD of our Brotherhood of Darkness, and it was terrible quality, and obviously it had come off of a commercial station or something, and they're just taking this thing down and put it on a DVD and were marketing. It was just sort of not a nice thing to do, but I'm not going to go after anybody who's distributing our information, even if they're violating our rules and making a profit, because a major thing is we want to get that information out. And of course, certainly my talk, Brotherhood of Darkness, is seminal to understanding that most of what you think you know is not true. Secondly, of course, our new talk on the forbidden secret is so vitally important. And then, of course, we have a new DVD and or video by Constance Cumby called The Emergence that goes into the New Age movement. We have, of course, a new four-tape set called The Secret Behind the Secret. And it goes, of course, into Rhonda Byrne's program of The Secret that's sweeping across America. And Rhonda Byrne has sold a book, 2 million copies. Her DVD has sold a couple of million copies. And she's going to teach people all across America how to be truly happy, how they can begin to manipulate the whole world with their mind and manipulate the universe and get whatever they want to. And it's been featured on Oprah Winfrey and by Larry King and by Jim Carrey and by Jack Canfield, who wrote the Chicken Soup for the Soul books. And they all admit you can get whatever you want to if you just learn how to manipulate the universe with your mind. What they do not tell you is that what you are doing, of course, is opening yourself up to demonic oppression. There really is another dimension out there, and you're laying yourself open to demonic possession. And if you read, of course, the book which this whole thing came from, it's called The Law of Attraction by the Hicks, Mr. Jerry and Esther Hicks, and which I just finished reading. They openly admit this is all about the other dimension, making contact with the other dimension. And when you do, why, you're violating God's admonition to avoid fortune tellers and mediums and certainly diviners and of course well witchers and all of these manifestations of the other dimension. And yet millions of people are getting into this. That's why you need to get our four tapes out on the Secret Behind the Secret, the four tape set on The Secret Behind the Secret. And then there's so much other material we have on our website. Go to RadioLiberty.com or go up on the internet. You can see the things listed there. And then, of course, once you have them, you have our permission to copy them as long as you're not making a profit on it. Help us to get the information out. Help people to understand we're involved in a spiritual battle being played on the political, ideological, and cultural battlefield. And then, of course, we ask you to tell others about our program, to pray for America, to pray for revival, to pray for Radio Liberty. Once again, our number, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR.
You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.